All right, ready to dive into another case. This one, well, this one is about a legal case, but don't worry, you don't have to be a lawyer to find this one interesting. It's Gary Bradley v. W.A. Duncan. And let me tell you, it really throws a wrench in the gears of criminal law and due process.
Yeah, you know what's wild about this one? It isn't just about some legal mumbo jumbo. It's about, like, a basic right, the right to defend yourself, you know? And when that right goes head to head with state rules, things get kind of messy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're talking about someone's freedom here.
Mm.
And right in the middle of it all is this whole idea of entrapment. You know, like when someone is pressured by law enforcement to commit a crime they wouldn't have otherwise, right?
Exactly. And this case is like a textbook example of habeas corpus review, which in a nutshell is basically a way to challenge whether someone is being held legally or not. And as we dig deeper, you'll see how tricky, like, really tricky it can be to prove entrapment.
Okay, so all you lawyers and law students out there, get ready. This is like a masterclass in legal strategy and all the crazy ins and outs of our justice system. But even if you're not a legal eagle, this case has enough twists and turns to keep anyone on the edge of their seat.
Yeah, so we'll be looking at a decision from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, a decision that really spells out when a judge's refusal to give specific jury instructions, like in this case, instructions about entrapment, can actually violate a defendant's due process rights.
Okay, so picture this. We're in California, and a man named Gary Bradley is arrested for selling cocaine. So far, sounds pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah.
But here's where things get really interesting.
So Bradley's saying he only sold the drugs because a police informant, this guy named Jose Flores, was going through some really bad drug withdrawal and was basically begging him for help. I mean, just imagine someone in that much pain pleading with you to break the law.
Man, that's a tough spot to be in. It's like, where do you draw the line between trying to help someone and breaking the law, right?
Mm.
And that's where Bradley's defense comes in. Entrapment. He's saying he wouldn't have sold the cocaine if Flores hadn't pressured him so much.
Yeah.
But get this. His first trial, it ends in a hung jury. The jury actually got instructions on entrapment and still couldn't agree on a verdict.
And then in the second trial, the judge decides to not give those entrapment instructions, even though Bradley's testimony from the first trial, where he describes Flores's desperate pleas, was still part of the evidence. And guess what? He gets convicted quickly, and sentenced to 25 years to life under California's three strikes law.
Wow, that's a huge swing, right? It really makes you wonder how much of a difference that one little instruction or lack of instruction had on the jury. Did Bradley even have a fair chance to present his side of the story?
Well, that is the question. And to make things even more complicated, California uses something called an objective entrapment test.
Objective entrapment.
Yeah.
Break that down for me. What does that even mean?
It means basically that instead of looking at the defendant's character, the focus is on what the police did. Did they, you know, would their actions have caused a normal law-abiding person to commit the crime? That's the question.
Okay, so in Bradley's case, would a law-abiding person faced with someone begging for drugs, someone going through withdrawal, would they cave under that pressure? Is that considered entrapment in California?
Yeah, that's what the court had to figure out. And to understand how they got to their decision, we're going to have to, you know, follow Bradley's case as it goes through the appeals process.
So Bradley, he's obviously not going to just accept a 25-year sentence, right? I mean, he appeals this thing.
Oh, yeah, he definitely appeals. He says that not giving the entrapment instruction violated his rights. And eventually his case, it ends up with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So, you know, now we're in the big leagues. We're talking federal court.
Okay, so what happens? What do the federal judges say about all this? Do they side with Bradley or with California?
Well, and this is where it gets interesting. The Ninth Circuit, they end up granting Bradley something called habeas relief. So basically, they're saying that he's being held unlawfully.
Wait, so they overturned his conviction?
Not quite overturned, but they're saying he deserves a new trial. And their reasoning, it's pretty clear. They look at Bradley's testimony, you know, the part about Flores begging for drugs, and they say that alone, that right there is enough to raise a real question about entrapment, something for the jury to consider.
So they're saying even if Bradley's story isn't enough to get him off the hook, it's definitely enough for the jury to at least hear about entrapment as a possible defense.
Exactly. And then they point to the big difference between those two trials. You had a hung jury the first time when the instruction was given, and then a super fast conviction when it wasn't. That difference, they say, shows just how important that instruction can be.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Seems like pretty solid evidence that not giving the instruction might have, you know, swayed the jury against Bradley.
And here's where the Ninth Circuit really lays down the law. They say that, look, even though states don't have to recognize entrapment as a defense, if they do choose to recognize it, then they got to make sure the defendant's due process rights are protected. And that means giving the jury proper instructions when the evidence, you know, when it calls for it.
So even though entrapment itself might not be a constitutional right, the fairness of how it's handled, that is a constitutional issue.
Exactly. The court's saying that by not giving the entrapment instruction, well, they took away Bradley's only real defense. And denying someone their defense, well, the court sees that as a huge due process violation.
Okay, so the Ninth Circuit is totally on Bradley's side. Case closed, right?
Well, not so fast. One of the judges on the panel, she actually disagrees with the majority decision. She writes a dissenting opinion.
Oh, a dissenting opinion. Okay, what's her problem with the ruling?
So her dissent is basically a warning about something called AEDPA, the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act. And this law, it makes it really, really hard to overturn state court decisions in habeas corpus cases. She's basically saying that federal courts shouldn't be second-guessing state courts when it comes to state law.
So she thinks the Ninth Circuit is overstepping their boundaries, getting involved in something that should be left up to the California courts?
Right. She thinks that deciding whether or not to give the entrapment instruction, that was California's call, not the feds.
So now we've got this power struggle going on, state versus federal, and AEDPA is like this big shadow hanging over everything. Sounds like something right out of law school.
Oh, absolutely. It really shows how complicated our legal system is and how the balance of power between the states and the feds, it's a delicate thing.
And believe me, we've only just scratched the surface here. There's so much more to talk about. Like what does this mean for lawyers and for defendants? And then there's some really big questions about the whole idea of entrapment. What does it really mean? We'll get into all that, and only gets more interesting from here. So this dissenting judge, she's basically waving the AEDPA flag, right? Mm-hmm. Saying, like, hands off to the federal courts. Can you break that down a bit more? What makes AEDPA so important in this case?
Well, it really comes down to, you know, the idea of federalism, AEDPA. It basically sets this really high bar for federal courts to, like, jump in and overturn a state court decision. It's not enough for them to just say, oh, we think you guys got it wrong. They have to, like, really prove that the state court's decision was not just wrong, but, like, objectively unreasonable.
Objectively unreasonable. Oh. Okay, that sounds like a pretty tough standard. What does that actually mean in practice?
It's like you're trying to convince this super skeptical judge that the state, like, they totally went off the rails. You know, their decision was so far out there, so unreasonable that no reasonable judge could have possibly come to that conclusion. In Bradley's case, the Ninth Circuit, they had to convince that dissenting judge that California's refusal to give the entrapment instruction wasn't just, like, a little mistake, but a total disregard for, like, the law and due process.
So they had to show that it wasn't just, like, a judgment call, but an actual legal error, right? Fascinating. But let's zoom out for a second. What does all this mean for, you know, regular people? What's the takeaway for someone listening who's not a lawyer?
I think in this case, it really highlights how important due process is. No matter who you are, what you're accused of, it reinforces the idea that everyone deserves a fair shot in court, a chance to defend themselves. And part of that is having access to all the possible defenses the law allows, you know, especially if there's evidence to back them up.
It's like that old saying, right? Better 10 guilty people go free than one innocent person be convicted. Due process, it's there to protect everyone. Even people who might actually be guilty. It's the foundation of a fair system.
Exactly. And beyond those big implications for due process, there are, like, some really practical takeaways here, especially for lawyers. Like, this case, it shows how important it is to really carefully document everything that happens at trial. If there's any evidence that could support a defense, even if it's not, like, a guaranteed constitutional right, lawyers have to fight to make sure the jury gets the right instruction.
Because you never know that one instruction could be the difference between, you know, a hung jury and a conviction,
sure.
A short sentence or a life sentence.
Exactly. And this case, it brings up another point. Remember how the first trial, it ended with a hung jury when they did have the entrapment instruction? Well, that's a big red flag for lawyers.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. A hung jury, even with the instruction, means there was some real doubt about whether Bradley was actually guilty.
Exactly. If a jury can't agree on a verdict when they have all the information, you know, including instructions on a possible defense, it means like there's real uncertainty about the defendant's guilt. So if a judge then decides to not give that same instruction in a retrial, well, it raises some serious questions about fairness and due process. It's almost like they're like deliberately trying to make a conviction more likely.
It's a bit unsettling when you put it like that.
Yeah.
So on top of documenting everything, lawyers need to like use hung juries to their advantage. It's not just a setback. It could actually be like a really powerful tool in an appeal.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's another interesting question this case brings up. What if entrapment isn't just about the defendant's, you know, their predisposition to commit a crime like the objective test suggests? Could anyone be entrapped given the right circumstances?
That's a scary thought. I mean, we all like to think we'd never commit a crime, but what if you were in a situation where the pressure was just like overwhelming?
Hmm.
What if the police used these tactics that were so manipulative, so coercive that even like the most honest person would break? This case kind of suggests that that's possible.
It does. It really opens up this whole can of worms, all these ethical and legal questions. Where's the line between, you know, legitimate undercover work and entrapment? How much pressure is too much? These are questions we, like, as a society, we need to think about. It's not just for the courts to decide.
Yeah. It makes you think about the limits of what law enforcement is allowed to do.
Yeah.
I mean, if the goal is to prevent crime, is it okay to use tactics that might actually cause someone to commit a crime they wouldn't have otherwise?
Yeah.
That's a slippery slope.
Oh, no doubt. Bradley v. Duncan, on the surface, it might seem like just another legal case, but it really gets at some really fundamental questions about fairness, justice, and the role of law enforcement in our society.
Really makes you stop and think, huh? I mean, if anyone, even like the most upstanding person, could be, you know, pushed into committing a crime, if the circumstances were right, where does that leave us?
Yeah, and that's precisely why this Bradley v. Duncan case, it's so important. It's not just about, you know, entrapment or habeas corpus. It's a starting point for a much bigger conversation about, you know, power in our legal system, the ethics of law enforcement, all that.
It's like this reminder that these individual cases, they can really have a ripple effect. You know, start debates about legal ideas that affect all of us.
Absolutely. Speaking of ripples, what are some things, like key takeaways, that our listeners should be thinking about after this deep dive?
Yeah, let's bring it all together. What's the big picture here?
Yeah. Well, I think first and foremost, it shows us how important it is to be, you know, informed, to be engaged citizens. We can't just assume the legal system, you know, is always working perfectly or fairly. Cases like this, they remind us that there are real people, real lives involved, and that the legal process, even though it's supposed to be just, it's not perfect.
Kind of a call to action,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We got to pay attention to these issues, understand our rights, and speak up when we see injustice happening.
Hmm.
It's easy to feel like helpless against the system, but this case shows that individuals can make a difference.
Couldn't agree more. And, you know, on a practical level, Bradley v. Duncan, it really underlines how important lawyers are in protecting those rights. The lawyers who represented Gary Bradley at trial and on appeal, they were like key in making sure his case got a fair hearing. It was their persistence that led to the Ninth Circuit's decision.
It's easy to be cynical about lawyers, but this case really shows why having a lawyer is so important. I mean, without those dedicated lawyers who are willing to, you know, challenge the system, fight for their clients' rights, Harry Bradley, he might still be, you know, serving that 25-year sentence for something he says he was entrapped into doing.
Yeah, that's right. And this case also, it makes us ask some tough questions about what entrapment actually is. If it's not just about the defendant's, like, their willingness to commit a crime, like the objective test says, then how do we define it? Where's the line between, you know, good undercover work and entrapment?
It's a slippery slope, right?
Yeah.
If we let law enforcement use these tactics that could basically make anyone commit a crime, are we really preventing crime, or are we, like, causing it?
It's a debate that's still going on. And Bradley v. Duncan, it adds another layer of complexity to it. This case might seem like, you know, dry, just a bunch of legal stuff, but it really deals with some fundamental questions about fairness, justice, and what law enforcement can and can't do in a free society.
So to everyone listening, whether you're, you know, a lawyer, a law student, or just someone who cares about justice, Bradley v. Duncan is a case worth thinking about. It reminds us that the law is always changing, and that these legal fights, They have a real impact on everyone's lives.
Absolutely. And if you're really interested, I encourage you to find and read the full Ninth Circuit decision. It's a really interesting read, full of, you know, legal details and arguments that'll stay with you long after you're done.
Very well said. And with that, I think we've come to the end of our deep dive into Bradley v. Duncan. A huge thank you to our expert for breaking down this complex and thought-provoking case for us.
It was my pleasure. Always enjoy digging into these fascinating legal puzzles.
And to all our listeners, thanks for coming along on this journey with us. We hope you learned something new, maybe got a new perspective, and maybe even started some interesting conversations of your own. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep into this fascinating world of law and justice.